What are we calling? Is this a podcast?
Red. It talks. Clash.
This is Reddit Talks Clash. Joining me today, we got Trample Damage, and we got Liam. Sam and Spencer are sitting this one out because they are boring and not fun and don't feel like talking about the update. So, Trample, you are joining us for your third time. Conveniently worked out to be the third episode of each of our seasons so far. So congrats on the perfect three trifecta, the holy trinity of RTC.
Been working that out for years, even before you guys were doing a podcast. I was like, one day I'm going to be able to be on a podcast with somebody on their third episode of their first three seasons. So my bucket list is nearly complete.
Jumping straight in, we are in update time. And so there are three sneak peeks out so far that we are going to talk about 1, 2, 3. And then at the end, I got some other questions for you, and we're going to take questions from the audience. So
questions from, oh, sorry.
Oh yeah, I can do it. I can learn how to reverb like you.
It's like my one trick that I'll have while I'm editing is adding vocal hall to me saying that.
All right. So sneak peek one, we got a couple days ago, the typical week opening sneak peek, all new levels of stuff and new levels and balance changes, right?
So you called it weak. When you say weak, are you saying like because there's not like a whole lot of meat to it?
Yeah, no, there's just, you know, nothing like new or fun or exciting in those ones usually. At least to me.
I thought like, I mean, I'm certainly interested in the new equipment for the Royal Champion. I think the Overgrowth spell is awesome. We can certainly talk about that, but I was actually more excited about making content for the first sneak peek than I was even about the second and third ones, just because I know so many people were nervous about the possibility of a nerf coming for Root Riders, and unfortunately, we managed to deliver on that one. But I'm actually really excited about all the balance changes and the new defense levels. I think I enjoy the level of what I'm referring to it as approachability, or that it's more approachable than it was in the past, instead of calling it easier. But I have been interested in, you know, maybe a little bit more edge to it, a little bit more challenge. I was just hoping it would come more in the form just of like stuff on the defensive side, as opposed to, you know, also coming at some of the, you know, like a Root Rider nerf, or even for the Super Barb, Super Archer fans, seeing the nerf for them.
On the whole, it's not really adding too much. Obviously, the equipment will take forever, but just time-wise, this update is like just shy of 2 months of builder time. 4 months of lab time, but let's be honest, we're all going to book all those anyway, so the lab time's pretty negligible, and like 1 month of pet time. If you consider the gold pass too, it's like a month and a half of content at most.
For those of you that are, you know, paying, not free to play.
Yeah, I don't spend any money on the game.
So, new levels of Minion, Hog, Bowler, Baby Dragon, Siege Barracks, and Log Launcher, which probably more... the more meaningful piece to that is the Super Troop versions of those. Of the new levels of all this stuff, what are you most excited for, Trample?
I agree with you on the Super Troop side, because I do think Super Minions are going to be pretty cool. I think Super Bowlers, I tried Super Bowlers a couple times at Town Hall 15 and just never really got it to work. I know a couple people that we clashed with were pretty good Super Bowler attackers at Town Hall 14, and I just never really was able to get it to catch on at 15. I thought, okay, 16... you know, a little more approachable, rage towers covering less space. Maybe we got a shot for this. And I haven't been able to make it work at a level that would rival some of the other army compositions I've been finding success with. So I am excited about seeing how the Super Bowlers wind up holding up. And one of my two primary attacks at Town Hall 16 has been a focus on a Super Hog army, which I absolutely love Super Hog Riders. And I love Hog Riders in general. And I'm very excited about that. Unfortunately, on the dev box, you know, when we're testing this, the new levels on the scatter shots and the Inferno Towers are, you know, comes at the same time that the Super Hog winds up getting a boost. So if anything, I feel like it will at least keep me maybe on par with what I had been doing before, but I don't know that I'm actually going to wind up in any better of a place than I was. I'm just glad that the additional level to the Hog Rider will at least make me feel like I can continue competing with that army, even with the new levels on the defenses.
I really liked Super Bowlers at Town Hall 14. It's one of the reasons I'm building a Town Hall 14 again. I don't see myself picking it back up at Town Hall 16 though, still.
because you feel like there are better army compositions, or because you just don't think they're going to be that viable with, you know, like the monolith and the spell towers and the merge defenses?
No, I mean, like, people were using Super Bowlers with success already at Town Hall 16 in the last 2 months. But for me, all through fit, like, I would occasionally try them through 15, and it just, I could never get it to work just with the larger bases and the more. Just, it was always harder to funnel them. Maybe Overgrowth spell kind of brings it back. A lot of the use I've been seeing so far today with the Overgrowth spell has been using two of them to force troops into the middle. I know, I still don't see it happening though. Super Minions, I'm a little more excited about, a little more hopeful, because it makes them a little more viable on defense too. And I'm tired of Ice Golem CCs. I really am. Also, with the Dragon buff, which wasn't too significant too, I think it brings Super Minion blimps back into the mix.
I agree. That's something that I was tinkering with yesterday and the day before, because I think about some of the attacks that I used to use a lot of Town Hall 14 was a Hydra attack, and I would wind up doing the kind of like popcorn balloon thing in the core. And I think I've seen a lot of people run a Sarch version of Hydra, and that can have a lot of success at Town Hall 16. But I think about the possibility of throwing Super Minions in there. The biggest boost that you get, you hit on it, it's not having to deal with Ice Golems. Now, of course, the Ice Golems can certainly come out and they can wind up getting caught by your Royal Champion while she's running through the base, or maybe an Archer Queen if she is, you know, poked into the defenses a little. But if you are a skilled Hydra attacker, you will, of course, be keeping that in mind. And you don't have to worry about all the stuff that you'd be dealing with the Super Archers, you know, whether there's a bomb tower or there's some giant bombs, the not having to deal with pulling the Ice Golems out of the clan castle. I think that the Super Minions are going to be pretty cool. And I actually was thinking maybe I'd give them a shot as a primary troop composition. You know, like I've seen people do the mass Inferno Dragon attacks. And I did for a little while. I was tinkering at Town Hall 14 with some dragons and balloons and Super Minions. And that was actually something that I met with pretty good success with, using a couple Super Minions at a time to help get some shots out ahead of the dragons to sort of soften the defenses up. And then, of course, you know, they move in and add their own damage, and they're a pretty good sized body. You know, they can hold their own against an Electro Titan in a way that the Super Archers can't, for people who do decide to go with Super Archers with Electro Titans in their clan castle on defense.
Do you think the 5 levels of the Owl are going to help air attacks very much, or do you think it's going to be like a nothing 5 levels like Lassie was?
I think I completely disagree with you on Lassie, but that's a separate conversation. I do believe that the Electro Owl, the extra 5 levels is definitely going to be helpful. And when you get the Electro Owl after the Warden dies off and it's just out there doing its damage, that's still pretty, pretty solid. I, more often than not, in the little bit of testing that I've done, feel like I'm going to have more success even putting Diggy on the Grand Warden than anything else. But I, you know, it's been a couple of attacks that I've made, and maybe it was, you know, the wrong base layout or the wrong deployment or something. But I do like that we are giving the Owl 5 more levels for nothing else, and it gives us stuff to do, and it also adds some extra viability. I mean, I know we've joked before in the past about the usage that I put Lassie to. Like, most of my Super Hog Rider attacks, I put Lassie on my Barbarian King because it just works really well with the way that I maneuver that army. But I do think that the extra 5 levels on the Owl will give it a little bit more life, and you'll see people potentially making that decision in a way that I don't see a lot of people doing right now.
Yeah, it's just, there's a lot of tiny little buffs in this that I think are going to bring dragons back into the meta. You know, had a decent amount of triples in the dev build with the very slightly stronger drags. The super drags, I think, are good. I don't know, I'm looking forward to doing drags again too, even if root riders are still going to probably work their way back in. I'm going to try and get away from it for a little bit.
I agree. And it's nice to just have, it's nice to have multiple opportunities, you know, multiple armies. Like right now, I at least have what I feel like are 2 solid army compositions. And we were talking even the other day before our competitive match where, you know, if I have a diamond shaped base, I'm very heavily leaning towards Super Hog Riders on those types of layouts. And with the more box bases or even the more centrally located town halls, the funneling that I get out of my Zapquake into a Golem Root Rider Witch army combination or Golem Super Giant Witch army combination, I feel like I've got a couple of different options. And for some bases, the location of the spell towers and when they are on their rage settings, like, you know, town halls in the 12 o'clock corner and I'm coming in at the 6 o'clock side into maybe like the Eagle Artillery and a Barbarian King, when rage spell towers are in both the 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock compartments. Sometimes those make me a little nervous with super hog riders because it can be a lot to deal with right on the way in. And then by the time my spells have all expired, sometimes coming around the back end, especially if I don't get the side that has the Tesla farm on my way in, which is a little bit nicer for me, coming on to a rage scattershot spell tower ricochet cannon with a couple of Teslas and maybe the Royal Champion or the Archer Queen on the back end, those are pretty brutal in a way that I might not be as concerned with some of the air troops. And so that's something I think I might actually wind up, you know, against the Diamond base being interested in using a Hydra army or a Dragon army to be able to help get past what would otherwise be some pretty punishing damage from both a ricochet cannon and a scattershot versus, you know, with air troops, I would not have to worry about the ricochet cannon aside from the damage that we have to deal to destroy it.
Yeah, makes sense. Speaking of Hydra and air spam, actually, baby dragons have a new level. So do you think Inferno Dragon Skelly will make a comeback?
I personally have very limited experience with that army composition because, you know, I heard C-Note, you know, the host of the Clash Tours podcast, he's talked a little bit about, you know, like some of those army compositions where people are using like Root Riders and Valkyries and you've got like all the freeze spells that you're trying to use and you just maybe use them a little bit too aggressively. One of the things that I feel like I like so much about the army compositions I'm used to is that I have very proscribed times that I plan on deploying those spells. And I feel like I've seen this with a lot of other people also where they'll do something like the Inferno Dragon attack. And it just feels like, you know, there's a defense targeting, quick, throw a skeleton spell, oh, throw another one. And then all of a sudden it's like, you maybe without a bunch of practice and a bunch of very precise observations on when and where to place them, I feel like it just turns into like a, I don't know, like an octopus slapping the iPad, dropping spells wherever. And, you know, like when I use my super hog attack, it's like, I know I'm using 2 rage spells with my heroes on the way in. I'm using 2 heal spells with my hogs on the way to the town hall. I'm raging near the town hall. And I only have 3 free spells that I'm worried about. My golem zapquake attack, it's like 8 of my spells are gone right away because I'm using the lightning and the earthquake spell, couple of freeze and 1 rage. With the, you know, those army compositions where they're using like 5, 6, 7 skeleton spells or free spells, I'm just like, I overdo it. And I feel like most people I watch trying to make those attacks wind up doing the same thing. And they look super cool when a pro gets a hold of it. And it's like, they've got the patience to provide those spells right where they're needed at the right time so that they don't wind up running out of gas on the back end. I'm sure, you know, people are gonna be like, you know, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, so I'm going to try this attack out. And, you know, maybe some people will meet with some success with it, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe not for everyone.
For the people who might only have like 1 book of fighting or enough medals for 1 hammer, what of the new troops are you going to prioritize in the lab?
I personally will go with my with hog riders right away. I'd be more likely to do bowlers after that and then minions. Although I'm fascinated at the possibility of the siege barracks, because when I first read the notes about the buff to the siege barracks, I did not realize 2 P.E.K.K.A.s came out till you had sent me a message. And I remember thinking, no, he's got to be wrong about that. Then I looked at the notes and it says in there plus 1 P.E.K.K.A. And I thought, oh, wow. And, you know, that could be something that's, and again, go back to Super Bowlers, whether, you know, you said something about people using overgrowth spells to create that kind of funneling. And I know the Flame Flinger is a very high value use for creating funneling for Super Bowlers, but an extra body, an extra P.E.K.K.A., that's a lot of damage per second. That is a ton of hit points.
It's a massive swing too, because if you're going to use it to funnel like on the outside, I know you love the Vamp Stash and with the King around the outside, a lot of attacks too, we would always used to bring like a you know, 2 or 3 witches with the King. Now I'm thinking you don't need to do that because of the extra P.E.K.K.A. So it's not only giving you that extra 25 troop space in the P.E.K.K.A., but also saving you, you know, 24 out of 2 witches to use around the outside. And the King's going to stay alive with the Vamp Stash forever. I'm really excited for the Siege Barracks. I don't think you need to do it in the lab at all immediately, just because, you know, you can bring one of your clan castle that's going to get upgraded.
Oh, yeah, duh.
But yeah, like, so yeah, it's not at all in upgrade priority, but it is still a very exciting upgrade to have access to.
One thing I did notice when I was tinkering around with it is the ricochet cannon is definitely something you have to be very careful about with, you know, like I think about how mortars became, not that I'm saying ricochet cannons are not relevant because they absolutely are, but mortars became more relevant when the Flame Flinger was a thing because it was one of the only buildings that could, one of the only defenses that could consistently target or stop or foil the Flame Flinger. the ricochet cannons in my testing, like two P.E.K.K.A.s would come out, it hit a few defenses or hit a few buildings on the outside, and then if they wind up heading in toward a wall, all of a sudden they were both gone from the ricochet cannon. The other thing I thought was interesting is seeing even when the P.E.K.K.A.s go in opposite directions, the multi-archer towers and the ricochet cannons both basically just unloading and destroying the wizards as they come out of the clan castle. So one thing people are going to have to keep in mind when they are choosing to use the siege barracks in lieu of a flame flinger is that some of those defenses, you don't see a whole lot of inferno towers near the perimeter that can hit troops outside the most external walls, but a lot of the multi-archer towers and the ricochet cannons are placed to be able to do that kind of damage. And I watched a ricochet cannon in one attack completely melt every wizard as it came out. It was like, hit the P.E.K.K.A., killed a wizard. Hit the P.E.K.K.A., killed another wizard. Hit the P.E.K.K.A., killed another wizard. And it was like, it basically nullified almost all the wizards in there. So I think people will just need to be very careful about deploying the siege barracks. It'll need to be near point defenses that are not splash, like expos and archer towers and regular cannons and mortars. But, you know, you get in range of the ricochet cannon and the multi-archer towers, and the siege barracks, I think, is going to become, you know, much less useful. So I think the choices, especially say like a Super Bowler attack, trying to use that siege machine to create one part of the funnel, it's going to be like, if you've got ricochet cannons or multi-archer towers in the corner there, especially for a box base coming, how Super Bowlers were really good, right? You come opposite the town hall and those box bases with a little bit of funneling. I think flame flinger you can use when there are ricochet cannons and multi-archer towers. If not, I think the siege barracks would be a good option.
I guess speaking of defenses too, we're also getting levels for the Infernos, the Hidden Teslas, the Scattershot, and Seeking Air Mines. Out of all of those, what are you prioritizing upgrading first?
Probably Inferno Towers, just because I see a lot of... I know that the Scattershots are great for dealing damage to clusters of troops like you'd see with Root Riders and whatnot, but the multi-archer tower, the multi-target on the Inferno Tower is also really, really great for whether it's a super barbarian attack or if it winds up being a Lalo attack. Like, multi-target Inferno towers in the core of the base are often what stops a Lalo attack from achieving a triple. So the extra damage on the scattershot it's nothing to scoff at, but I think I'm probably going to wind up prioritizing the Inferno towers first and then the scattershots, and then I'll do the Teslas afterwards.
I'd agree with that too. I think the Infernos are getting a nice buff, and you have three of them. The scatters, I think the new level of scatter is still weaker than the scatter was at Town Hall 15 before the nerfs.
I believe that is a true statement.
The only nice thing I think is nice with the scatter shot upgrade is that it gives it enough HP to where it needs an extra lightning spell. If you're going to zap it out, you could do 6 lightnings in a quake, but now you're going to need to do 7.
That's one of the first things I was checking. When I saw the new defensive level on the scatter shot, I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to like get some crazy hit point boost and be something above a ricochet cannon. Because right now I'm always bringing, except rare exceptions in war where somebody has a scatter shot with a spell tower and an inferno tower and at least one expo plus another defense. If I get that kind of value, I will go zap and quake those. But normally I'm trying to get the Eagle Artillery or a Ricochet Cannon in my Zap Quake. So I'm already sitting at 7. So when I saw that the hit points were still going to be in range, I was like, okay, cool. It's not going to change anything from my perspective, at least not for most of my armies.
We don't need to get into the nerfs. The Root Rider, Super Archer, Super Barb all took decent nerfs too. If anyone is interested in Trample's opinion on all that, I'll just refer you to the latest episode of Inside Clash, where he talked about a lot of that stuff. We're going to move right along. One quick nerf I do want to bring up, though. I know Liam is kind of our resident Clan Capital guy. Or he's going to be surprised if he didn't know that. But the Super Miners took a little nerf. I know, Liam, you go through easily more than 100 counts on Clan Capital every weekend, right?
Yeah, more or less. And with the new kind of super minor HP nerf, like, I'll be honest here, I don't think I'm gonna change it unless it's gonna be a significant impact. So as of right now, if you have like a capital with a 1,800 upgrades, you can still pretty much two shot most districts with super miners. I haven't had the dev build or anything to test it, so I don't know if it's gonna change, but realistically, in the past, it hasn't, like when they nerfed it as well. So I don't know what's going to be the difference this time. I know they're trying to encourage us not to use it for now, and I think I'm still going to stick with it. So I actually forgot what I was using before Superman. It's like, that's how much I use it. But no, like, I think, yeah, graveyards, yeah, definitely, yeah, no, it's still Superman. It's gonna be also, and it's probably mostly just because I'm so lazy, I don't want to switch armies on every single account.
I meant to test it, but I just didn't actually feel like it every time I opened the dev build. And plus, like, in the dev build, they don't make it easy to go find a max, a capital. It's not easy to upgrade it. Didn't feel like it. Sen, on YouTube, Sen FGR, look him up. I'm assuming he'll have a video about it sooner rather than later. Also, the other thing we don't care about, probably, I'm assuming, is the Night Witch buff. Do either of you guys have anything to say at all about it?
I don't. I actually, it was funny earlier in the creator Slack. Ashger, who I have mentioned before, is one of the creators in there. It's like maybe the biggest builder base content creator, recently got added to the program. So I actually, he had posted a question, and I was like, so can I like make videos already showing the new stuff that's going on the builder base? And I ended up replying, you know, clearly I'm not a Supercell employee, but I was like, yes, absolutely. You know, as soon as stuff is leaked, you can, you know, not leaked, as soon as stuff is officially released and we've got the sneak peeks out there, you can make as much of the content as you want. So I imagine if he had known that before, we'd probably already see something out there. But I also dropped a message in there below that saying something like, hey, by the way, thanks for all the work that you do on the builder base. I'm more of a main village person myself, so I never do any content for the builder base, but I'm glad that you're out there putting out that kind of content for people that don't have too many bases like Liam and you. You know, they probably play the builder base a little bit more. And I am glad that we do have content creators that like to add at least some additional value there. But yeah, I anticipate we'd be seeing something on the builder base pretty soon, but I don't care. I do. I haven't actually attacked the second stage of the builder base for weeks.
It's funny, like Asher, basically like all the balance changes for the builder base are just like verbatim word for word stuff he's suggested recently. If you're looking for builder base advice too, just go straight to the source of those balance changes and check out his channel. Running through the rest of Sneak Peek 1 before we move on though. Friendly wars simultaneous to regular war, that's huge.
I'm really excited personally. I used to do a lot of special event wars where I would do, you know, just like random rules, like the only spells you can use are rage spells and poison spells, or only troops that are below a certain housing capacity. And I haven't even bothered trying to do any of those recently because the addition of ore and having it tied to war, a lot of people are very kind and friendly and are willing to jump in on these things when I wind up setting them up. And I feel guilty knowing that a lot of people would probably jump in on them just because, you know, there is some fun to it and there's like the community feel. But I haven't wanted to ask anybody to bypass being able to pick up ore in order to take part of some kind of like, yep, you know, goofy, quirky special event thing. So now with the ability to do that, of course, there's the esports side, which is good because I'll still miss out on people participating because they've got like an event war scheduled, but I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, I know it's going to be real nice for the Reddit events too, because, you know, just like you said, you're not asking people to sacrifice progress on their equipment to participate in these kind of things.
Speaking of which, since Spencer isn't here, you know, Katastras versus Mods 2 sign up is open, I believe.
Yeah, I'll put links to that in the show notes if you're interested in participating. There will be an ore reward for participants on that one. I don't remember exactly how much it was. It'll be less than a regular war, but it is now in addition to whatever you're earning in the regular wars in your home clan. So bonus ore. Look for that sign up and please do. Loot. Speaking of loot, we get collector levels at Town Hall 14. Cool, right?
I will say this as just one thing I will say. This is actually what I was hoping to see, because a lot of the dialogue that we were hearing and seeing prior to the update and any announcement of what was going to happen with the troops, there was a feeling that I kept getting of, we're comfortable with the power level of Root Riders. And almost the feeling I was getting was almost like the goal would be to buff other troops to the level of usefulness that Root Riders are. And I kept thinking we could easily counteract that and make the game a little bit less approachable without making it too crazy by doing something like adding a new level to the gold mines and elixir collectors and drills, but instead of them getting only 70 hit points, you could give them like 200 more hit points. And that would be and they could even buff the gold storages and the elixir storages, giving them an extra 500 or 600 or 800 hit points. And that would add challenge and difficulty because of simply the more hit points you have to eat through in order to get a base down. I was hoping that they would take somewhat of an approach like that to, you know, sort of balance things out a little bit, but you know, 70 extra hit points will slow us down a little bit. And, you know, the extra loot is cool for the people that are using sneaky goblins.
Well, yeah, you know, it's 70 HP across 17 buildings. I'm more excited just because it's that much more loot that you're going to get in dead bases.
The sneaky goblin farmers. I have too many bases for that. I just open a base, I spam an army, and then I close. I try and hit something that's a decent amount of loot, and then I close it out. But, you know, from a sneaky goblin farmer's perspective, this sounds awesome, because I guess that's probably going to put you to being able to pick up, like, what, probably 14, 15,000 dark elixir in a totally dead base with full collectors.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the passive income on that as well. And the new loot record, probably.
Yeah, like the payback period from the upgrade is fairly short, because the overall collector upgrade times have been dropped significantly pretty recently. So, like, the payback period isn't even anything to worry about, too. Like I said at the top of this segment, it's a month and a half, 2 months of upgrade time at all. So you'll be working on collectors in a month, if you're max 16 at least. Moving on, the chat UI. Reactions. I know Liam's going to go bananas over reactions. How are you two, as leaders of big 7-8 clan families, how are you going to use the pinned messages?
I am terrible with clan management. It's one of the things I like the most about the clan that we're in, the good guys. We, you know, everybody kind of just, like, sort of knows what they're supposed to do. So I'll say, generally speaking, I don't know that I'll use it that much, aside from I'm almost going to use it to be able to keep messages for myself of who's going to be doing, because, you know, with us being in Champ 1, we can't run the whole clan in Clan War League. And so some people will move over to our second clan. And so being able to keep track of that and have it in one static spot is something I think will be really helpful, especially because what will happen sometimes, I'll just send a clan mail like, hey, let me know who's wanting to do Clan War League this month in Trample Damage in our other clan. And, you know, sometimes somebody will post something on there and I won't be back to one of my bases and the good guys for a little while and I miss it. And then I'll get a message from somebody the next day on Discord like, oh, by the way, did you see this person's message? You know, with the clan, we have plenty of co-leaders in the clan, so it'll be easy for someone to just pin those kinds of messages so that it's easy for us to keep track of Clan War League planning within the clan. So that, and then also for other clans, sometimes it's nice to be able to have, you know, every now and then some kind of additional war communication of, hey, you know, let's say, you know, X number of bases, please focus on these guys, focus on these people, go after these accounts. Like, I think that kind of thing would be pretty useful. And Kat, the host of the Pineapples and Thorns podcast, she's always wanted to be able to edit the clan mail. That's something that's, like, been on her wish list forever. And I was telling her the other day, I was like, well, you can kind of sort of edit clan mail now because you can edit the comments that you're typing while you're typing in chat. And then you can just pin those. So you sort of have editable clan mail at this point, which is not fully accurate, but I just think it's a nice place to be able to use as communication.
But when you pin stuff, it pins it to the bottom of the list. So if you want to change a message that might be higher up by retyping it, you got to retype everything.
Well, yeah, but I think her beef is, which we've all experienced, like, I get to the end of a clan mail and then I notice a typo on the first word and I'm like, Do I live with a typo or do I delete the whole thing and retype it? And I am all about efficiency. So normally I just leave it as a typo and then I'll go grab another account to say, please note there was a typo on the other clan mail.
Liam, how are you going to use all your pinned message space in Titans?
Well, so it's interesting because Trevor was saying he's like a terrible clan leader because he doesn't really do anything. But actually, I would say that the best type of leadership is kind of not an inactive leadership, but like, where this, the clan is like self-managed, as you were saying. So basically, everyone knows what they're doing, what they have to do, and you really don't really ever need to use clan mails or, you know, pinned messages, because most of the things that you would use them for are, should be obvious to most people. But I know a lot of people will disagree with that. And for me personally, I'll probably use pinned messages. I haven't really found a good use case for them. For me, they're kind of like clan mails, which I tend to prefer not to use, because I feel like there's some clans that use them way too much, and then it kind of diminishes the importance of them. So yeah, that's kind of my opinion on clan mails. But pinned messages, like, for example, in our Discord server, we have like the clan link, so maybe I'll use them that there. And other than that, maybe like if it's near the end of a war or something, like, you get your words in, but that should already be obvious. Like, I shouldn't have to say those obvious things. But yeah, like I like Trample's approach, where it's like, you know, he doesn't do most of it, and it's mostly managed by other co-leaders, which I really like, and that's good good clan leadership in my opinion.
Liam, you had something for rounding out Sneak Peek One?
Yes. So there was one comment from the subreddit. Someone was, and this goes mostly to Trample as well. So, are you surprised by the fact that they buffed the E dragons? Because, well, I'll tell you my answer after that.
I was surprised when I saw that. I don't know that I'm terribly shocked, though. I think what they're trying to do is create more opportunities for people to use other army compositions than what we have been using. And I think that was maybe a little bit of pandering to say, hey, look, oh, it's like I'm dangling a really juicy carrot out there. Use some air troops, because the meta is just like completely ground right now with Root Riders and or the uber professionals who are still using their traditional Lalo attacks. And it's something that I feel like they were just saying, you know, we want to bring more power to the skies, and I think this is a way for us to go ahead and get there. So I'm not like terribly surprised, and it's not in percentage terms, because that's really the thing about so much of this is it's the percentages of the increases that tend to make the biggest impact. And because Electro Dragons already have such a beefy amount of hit points in the first place, it, you know, a little bit of extra hit points, it, you know, it helps, but it's not like they got a 14 or 15% increase to their hit points. So I'm not anticipating it to make a huge impact.
All those E-Drag bammers out there, though, they'll be excited about that.
If I wasn't that interested in, like, planning and strategizing and stuff, I would probably, I mean, like, I sometimes wonder why I bother with most of my quick, you know, spam my army out, close the app type of army combinations involve, I drop 8 earthquake spells, throw a rage down at the opening for where I'm dropping them, and then a skeleton spell, trigger my warden ability right away, and the army is just like golems or ice golems along with witches and bowlers or with yetis and witches or something along those lines. And I think the only reason why I don't choose to use electro dragons instead is because the only way you immediately empty all of your spells so that you can successfully close the app and have, you know, like sort of a full army composition that has been deployed is if you were doing just lightning spells to take out air defenses, but I just don't think that's enough value because the pathing is garbage for electro dragons unless you do a little bit of prep work and a little planning, but that takes more time than quickly dumping 8 earthquake spells, spamming all my troops, and then hitting the warden's tome.
Can't spam easily anymore. Okay, moving on to Sneak Peek 2, new Royal Champion equipment. Rick, do you want to go into the first one, Hog Puppet?
Yeah, we get Hog Puppet, which unlocks at Blacksmith level, whatever it is, but Town Hall 14 is my... Like, that's how I always contextualize stuff. I don't like thinking about Blacksmith level or anything else like that. Just Town Hall 14. At max level, spawns 9 hogs, 1,000 health recovery, 570 HP increase, which is more than the Royal Gem gives you HP, but less than half the recovery to when you activate the ability. And real nice DPS boost. Haste Vial, though, is what I personally think is the real star of this part. He's like 12 seconds of double attack speed. She moves super fast, constant DPS increase, and she's just super fast overall. Of the two, Trample, what do you think is going to be the bigger difference maker?
For most attackers, the average attacker, I think people are probably going to be better off using the Hog Puppet. In the same way that I argue the average attacker is better off using the Vamp Stash and the Healer Puppet, because the additional hit points, the blink on the Hog Puppet, which I don't know what other people are calling it, but the moment of the invisibility that will remove her being targeted by an Inferno Tower or a Monolith or whatever big defenses are targeting her, that piece is going to be really huge for keeping her alive at the same time that she summons, especially, you know, for the max Hog Puppet, 9 Hog Riders. I think that ability is going to be incredibly game-changing for a lot of people in their attacks because she'll have more hit points and then she'll also have some more blockers. I will actually argue that removing the Seeking Shield to put, even though that's like her signature thing, removing the Seeking Shield and putting the Hog Puppet on there gives her so many more hit points, plus more health recovery, plus the Hog Riders that are more hit points that have to be dealt with. And I know people will make the same argument with Hog Puppet that they do with the Barbarian Puppet of, oh, you know, Scattershot and they're gone, or couple spring traps and they're gone. It's like, yes, I get it, but it's also 9 bodies and one of them can take down a scattershot if it's left inside the scattershot's radius where it can't be targeting. So I think the Hog Puppet's going to be really huge for most players, and I would strongly recommend people upgrade that first. However, I do think that the more skilled clashers are probably going to wind up using, the best players in the world usually use the Royal Champion after most of the base is down, and they're sending her in to take the last six or seven or maybe eight defenses, and that's her primary objective. She can do that more effectively with the haste file than she can with some of those other equipment pieces. And you're talking about being excited about the haste file. I think most of the more pro players are probably going to be excited about that for the exact same reason. Personally, I'm all about hit points and health and life gain and recovery. And for that, plus I love hog riders. But for that reason, I think I'm going to be on the Royal Gem and the Hog Puppet almost on all my accounts. And I've been tinkering a little bit with the different combinations. And what I've been running into so far, I get criticized. I post stuff on Reddit and people are like, you're stupid. You didn't test this iteration. There are thousands of iterations between base layouts, the army that you're using, whether or not there's enemy heroes, the spells you're bringing. There are so many variables. But in the first bit of testing that I've been doing, there are six different combinations of her four abilities that she has. And almost every single one of them, when I've been testing all these different scenarios, almost every one of them, she gets the exact same number of buildings down. Sometimes I'll be like, oh, also they got this archer tower down. But otherwise, whatever combinations you use, I think Supercell has done a great job balancing them, just like they did with the other heroes.
They both feel like they're going to be good. From everything I've done playing around with them too, I think I'm going to, no matter which one I'm going to use from time to time, I think it's going to replace the shield. And I'm going to stick with the Royal Gem as the secondary one. Would you agree?
Yeah, without any kind of, I could see somebody choosing to use the Hog Puppet and the shield. No hit point recovery is going to be really brutal on her unless you are using the ability super early on and proactively to like gut a portion of the base using that ability. Because I could see her early on. This is something that I've been testing her already. If you have a giant or a pair of giants or an ice golem near a compartment and you send her in, but all those defenses are targeting that other stuff, especially if you have the fox on her, you can go drop the Royal Champion. About 3 seconds in, you drop an ice golem. Ice golem starts taking the damage. Royal Champion is visible. She gets her first round of attacks in. By the time the ice golem winds up popping, she's probably turning invisible for the second time. And then if you trigger her haste ability very early on, like that's the thing is, we think a lot of these abilities, we think about them in terms of like, the Archer Queen historically has always been a very reactive ability. Oh, she's about to go down. Quick, use her ability to save her. Barbarian King's about to go down. Everybody loves the gauntlet. I get it. I understand. Barbarian King's about to go down. Trigger the gauntlet. He's going to, go out in a blaze of glory. The Royal Champion with the haste file cannot be treated that way because she's going to be so low on hit points. You're going to trigger that ability. She's going to be super ready to go after stuff. And then she's going to die. If you don't have her paired up with something that will recover some hit points as well.
Definitely, too. That's something I wanted to bring up as well, was that using either one of these two, you are going to have to be more proactive with it. And instead of saving her for a cleanup troop, I think she's going to shine more sending her in with the main body of an attack and having her just assist and take advantage of any tanking from the rest of the troops with her to just help push the main body of your attack all the way through to where your heroes aren't necessarily the only ones left cleaning up at the end, but you're going to save a lot more of those troops too. So I think it's going to change how you have to use the RC in a lot of ways, but I don't know. It's also like everything feels really good on her right now too. No matter which combo you use, it's still going to feel strong, I think.
Are you two not concerned about if you use the hog puppet that you'll have, like, if there's like giant bombs, that all your hogs are gone and you basically just wasted one of the equipment slots?
I'll answer that from the perspective of I am unapologetically in favor of the Barbarian Puppet. My go-to equipment on my Barbarian King is the Vamp Stash on the Barbarian Puppet. I have not upgraded my giant, and this is, because it's easy for me because I can tinker with this stuff in the development box. All my favorite army compositions, my most favored abilities for the Barbarian King are the Puppet and the Vamp Stash. And everybody's like, Barbarian Puppet is so stupid because they all wind up dying so early on. There are two reasons why I'm going to say that the Hog Puppet is going to be still amazing with the Royal Champion. Number one, Hog Riders are beefier than Barbarians are. They're going to wind up surviving a giant bomb. They're going to wind up surviving a single shot from a scatter shot. They're going to wind up being able, I don't know if that's true. Do they survive a single shot from a scatter? I think they might. But regardless of the Hog Riders at all, let's pretend for a moment that they do absolutely nothing. The additional hit points and hit point recovery, plus the 1 second, that blink of invisibility that the Royal Champion is going to get with the Hog Puppet, I think is what will make her, even if she was only, like when we were originally testing the Hog Rider in the development box, the Hog Rider puppet, it was fewer Hog Riders. And I think because of the feedback that all the creators gave, they said, okay, we got to make this a little bit jazzier. That 1 second blink plus the hit point recovery would make it to where I would want to use it even if she was only summoning 4 Hog Riders. The fact that she's summoning 9, that's amazing. Because for every time you wind up triggering it at the exact wrong time, 2 giant bombs are hitting along with a scatter shot colliding with them at the same time, and poof, they're gone in a puff of smoke. It's the same thing with my barbarian game. Sometimes I wind up triggering the ability, and yeah, you know, some of the barbarians go down to a giant bomb, but it takes them a couple seconds to spawn all of them, so some of them wind up surviving. And when they don't hit a giant bomb, those 44 angry barbarians will split up, and like, I've had times where it's like one pack goes after the monolith and another pack is going after a ricochet cannon or a scatter shot or something, and they are very, very useful. I think the Royal Champion's Hog Puppet is going to wind up in the exact same boat. They're going to be a nice additional bonus on top of the hit point recovery and the blink, more so than the value that you're necessarily going to get out of the Hog Rider. But if you do wind up using her with the Grand Warden and those hogs spawn inside the Grand Warden's tome, now they're going to be getting an extra 700 or 800 hit points from the tome as well, and they are that much more viable. Because even regular barbarians can survive a giant bomb when they're inside the Warden's Eternal Tome, which I see happen all the time. You know, they don't have very many hit points left, but they do survive that one blast. I think we're going to see a lot of the same stuff with the Hog Puppet.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to using her with the Siege Barracks again in hybrid style attack too. Just 10 hogs out of the Siege Barracks at the end with her 9 hogs as well. She's 19 hogs is a lot towards the end of an attack. It's going to be, I'm excited for hybrid to be back. I'm really excited for hybrid to be back, and I hope it pans out that way.
Might even save a heal spell for that. Like save a heal spell for the Siege Barracks Hog Riders and the Royal Champion at the end. That's a good thought. I didn't even think of that.
All right, to wrap up that second sneak peek, we have one question from the subreddit as well, or more of a comment. What do you think about the fact that the Royal Champion's iconic shield will more or less now be her worst equipment, or will kind of be relegated to the Lassie realm?
I don't think it will be. Like, there's certainly going to be a lot of like fun situations. I think you could do both. I'm thinking about pairing the shield, since I already have it maxed anyway, with the haste sometimes too, because you're gonna, right when you pop that off, you get 4 defenses destroyed or significantly damaged, because it does like 2500 per hit on 4 targets, right? The shield. You know, yes. And on top of that, like plus the 12 seconds of her just going bananas with the spear after that, she's with both those together, she's going to take out a huge chunk of a base on her own. And there are certainly going to be ways to take advantage of that. Just, you know, wiping an entire corner to use that for funneling. You know, you save yourself an overgrowth spell, which we're going to talk about here in a second. To say the shield is useless is, I don't think, accurate.
I completely agree. My thought, the easiest way to sum this up is it is 10,000 points of damage that will happen every single attack, no matter what. You're going to have times when you got the Royal Champion going in with, whether it's the Hog Puppet or if it's the Royal Gem along with the Rage Vial or the Haste Vial, where she maybe you lose track of her a little and she winds up, you know, not dealing quite as much damage during her raged or her hasted portion because, you know, she trips over a couple of giant bombs at the same time that she gets hit by a scatter shot, or you trigger her ability at the same time that some skeletons pop up. And yes, she moves super fast and it's crazy how quick she moves, but you will lose out on the efficacy of the haste vial in a lot of the times when you're going to wind up triggering that ability. The Seeking Shield is a guaranteed 10,000 points of damage. And I know I'm not the only one who has taken down so many town halls with that 2,500 points of damage. I think that for my personal army compositions, I'm not going to have as much value from the rage, I mean, from the Seeking Shield, but it is still a force to reckon with.
I couldn't tell you over the last 4 years she's been a hero or whatever, just how many attacks I've had saved by just the distance of the shield taking down the last couple defenses on the other side of the base, allowing my queen to stay alive or other troops to stay alive at the end too. Like the distance on it, it's very clutch. Like, and we're all gonna have time fails where we really wish we still had a shield.
Agreed.
Yeah, and it's especially useful like for clan games on if anyone has rushed accounts to get those early one star challenges done because you can get the town hall from the outside. So that's what I'm going to be using him mostly for. But yeah, that's a very...
Oh, yeah.
But even Seeking Shield on the Grand Warden's, the Grand Warden statue, I use the Seeking Shield on my Town Hall 13s to help finish out on, you know, maybe one or two accounts, maybe. I might have gotten the Frozen Arrow.
All right, final sneak peek that we're going to talk about before we move on to some other stuff. The Overgrowth spell. This is the tricky one. I've had a real hard time wrapping my head around how exactly I'm going to use it, especially at the different levels. Real quick stats. At max, 28 seconds it lasts. It's 2 troop space. It's basically a freeze and invis together. The buildings it locks down are invulnerable to damage, and your troops are going to ignore them anyway. But I don't know. I don't know if it's going to end up being niche use like the recall, or if it's going to be pretty OP and work its way into most attacks. I've seen a lot of interesting videos today. I haven't heard your thoughts on the Overgrowth spell yet, Trample. So, lay it on me.
I'm going to break the Overgrowth spell into 2 different buckets. One is going to be the more proactive use of funneling. The other is going to be the more reactive use of keeping it from stopping some defenses. And I did post something on Reddit today showing a couple of examples of how I think this is going to be in use. And I'll start at Town Hall 12 because it's the first place that I went. You see plenty of people who love to do, whether it's Electro Dragons or just Mass Dragons, at a Town Hall 12, just total spam attack. And I shared an example where plenty of times, people, they'll just like drop a line of dragons all the way across the side of the base. And one of the things I shared on something I posted on Reddit earlier is using the Overgrowth spell to basically wipe out a portion of the defenses. And I think there was like some gold storage or something, but it has such a big radius that it just makes a portion of the map disappear. And then, especially if you're going inside the first row of walls, and you can put a king or a queen on the outside to start taking out maybe like some gold mines or some elixir collectors. And then you have this perfect narrow path where I spammed a bunch of dragons and balloons with the Grand Warden, and they immediately go in. And they decimated this Town Hall 12. And here's how I'm thinking about this. If you think about the base as like a, numbered 1 through 9, where the 3 o'clock compartment is the number 3, the 12 o'clock compartment is the number 1. It's almost like a phone pad, right? 1, 2, 3 across the top, 4, 5 would be the center compartment, 6 being the compartment between 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock, 7, the number 7 being the 9 o'clock compartment. When you use an Overgrowth spell, let's say on what would be compartment number 2, and then you send your dragons into compartment number 1, and they start moving from 1 into 2 because that's the natural closest place with nothing visible in compartment number 2. They're moving counterclockwise in this example from the 12 o'clock compartment into the compartment toward 9 o'clock. As they're moving through there, you drop a blimp in to take out the core. They'll just keep looping back around the base until they eventually finish up right where you dropped your Overgrowth spell to start. So you can use the Overgrowth spell to almost, I'm thinking of it as like unfolding the base. Because imagine like how much easier attacking would be if the base was this really long rectangle instead of a square. You wouldn't have to do any kind of funnel. You drop them in at one side, they go straight across the rectangle, you're good to go. The Overgrowth spell is going to allow us to sort of unpack bases in that capacity. And I think that's going to be the single best use for the Overgrowth spell. The other thing that I mentioned is using it sort of proactively to, stop the defenses. It's like more reactively to stop the defenses. Another thing that I shared was using my Zapquake Golem Root Rider army is, zap a portion to create a little bit of funneling. I start sending my heroes in, and against centrally located town halls, when you drop an Overgrowth spell on top of 2 poison towers and a ricochet cannon and a multi-archer tower and 2 scatter shots and the town hall, and you've got 28 seconds where you're, whether it's super giants, golems, root riders, witches, I don't care what it is, they're basically starting to loop around the base in the way that normally when we see those 1 stars, it's because as the troops are circling around the center compartment, they're getting trashed by the town hall, they're getting trashed by scatter shots, they're getting trashed by inferno towers. But imagine if you could make that loop around the base without fear of all those defenses in the core also punishing your troops while they're making that circuit. So that those densely packed cores are going to be something you can kind of nullify that core for a good 30 seconds while your troops are working their way around. And then you can have like, whether it's, your siege machine or, your king and your queen come in to then go into that core compartment, especially for the giant gauntlet lovers out there. Barbarian King can do a really good job of wiping out a decently packed core. I think that's the other really active use, is going to be peeling away sort of that outer layer while all those defenses in the core are nullified, then letting your heroes go in to take out the core while the rest of your troops just keep scooping up all the stuff on the outside. I love it. I'm super excited.
Does that mean that we'll be seeing like a greater shift towards more spread out bases then?
I mean, I think with anything, that's part of the beauty of the game, right? Is there's always a trade-off. That's what the meta is, right? All of a sudden it's like, oh, well, these, you know, densely packed bases sometimes do a little better at stopping Root Riders, because by the time they get into the core, you know, maybe like just a massive amount of damage is being dealt all at once, and it's hard for them to stay alive, and you've got two poison towers in the core, but then that opens up another attack to being a little bit more successful. I think that it is probably going to be a spell that is very poorly used by the average clasher, because, you know, Rick started with like, it's like, it's a tricky spell to use. It's not like, oh yeah, just, you know, like blow up the air defenses and spam a bunch of electro dragons. Like, it's going to require a lot of precision and skill. Like, I've been tinkering already with the amount of time that it takes to get a blimp from the core to the other end of the base, or from the core to the middle, and timing it so that right as the blimp gets there, the overgrowth spell wears off, so that your blimp has like had, you know, a lot of free coverage on its way over there. But the timing is going to be so tricky that I don't know people are necessarily, at least not any time in the near future, are going to wind up designing bases around it, just because I think it's such a difficult spell to use really effectively.
It's going to make trap placement more important too, because I know you just said like a blimp free traveling over, but traps will still go off. Air mines will still go off too. There are going to be chances that you have to basically get a free traveling blimp pretty far. You just really have to be good at predicting traps. Maybe air traps get spread out now too, instead of trying to bait one angle of approach. Seeing how base design changes in the next 2 months will be very interesting too. But playing around with it in the dev build too makes you realize like 28 seconds can be a real long time, but also, it's depending on what you're doing with it, 28 seconds is nearly nothing too. If you're trying to queen charge and using that to help funnel her, she gets nothing done in 28 seconds. Ward walks get nothing done in 28 seconds. Your flame flinger gets nothing done in 28 seconds. So if you're trying to funnel them too, I think you're going to have to use basically two of them at the start and push things through very rapidly through the center. But then you also have to kind of deal with your troops are going to backtrack and go wonky. So I don't know, it'll be weird to see how it develops and what type of meta attacks it gets used in long term. But it'll be a really fun CDBL with everyone's old bases.
Yeah.
Just trying to see what exactly
is, you can, is this still viable?
If you have a keen eye for bases, I think you're going to have you're probably gonna have a lot of fun this CDBL. Any more overall thoughts on the overgrowth spell?
I'm excited. I just think I like the creativity. That's one of the things, like, you know, when I sit down, I brainstorm about, oh, they could do a troop that does this or a spell that does this. And every now and then, you know, they'll release something and it's at least tangential to something that I've either thought of or heard somebody else mention. This is something that I feel like was such an inventive and original thing, because it does have, you know, the pros and cons wrapped so tightly together, that I'm just absolutely fascinated by the spell itself. And I'm glad that it's only two housing spaces as opposed to being more than two housing spaces. I've seen a lot of people commenting on my Reddit post today about, oh, you know, this is like too broken. And like, it seems like it. When I first saw the stats on, I was like, oh my gosh, this thing's going to be incredible. The first time I used it, I don't know, I felt like, a kid that found a toy that they're not supposed to be playing with, and all of a sudden they broke something in the house. I'm like, oh my gosh, this works different than I thought it was going to work.
We're at an hour now. We're into our ramble damage timeline. How much time do you have to go through a few more things?
I'm good.
All right, cool. Yeah, let's do it. So anyone here listening live too, if you have questions you would like Trample to address, please put them down in the chat. And I have a few more things that I want to argue with you over too. We've talked a little bit about this. We disagree on whether or not the rate of ore that we're getting now is sufficient. So just walk me through your insane stance on that one more time, please.
I think you're a crybaby. So I think this is it's such a game-changing thing for them to have introduced equipment. And the analogy that I continuously use when trying to discuss this is, imagine if today they gave us a dark barracks with all of the troops, and all the troops started out at level one, which that's not even what they did. They gave us some of the equipment at higher levels because of our corresponding hero abilities or corresponding hero levels. My thought in general on ore and equipment is they had to start it somewhere. And it just so happens to be that all of us in the midst of the Town Hall 16 upgrade were so excited about what they brought to the table and all the variability, because I think that's the best thing about the equipment more than anything else. You've already got variability that you can use with your army composition. I know at Town Hall 14, we all convinced ourselves that some of the pets would be used a little bit differently. It's like, they're not. Like, there was a very standard use for your pets at Town Hall 14. Town Hall 15 absolutely opened up more variability, although most people kind of had their preferred pets that they were using for their attacks and stuff. But Town Hall 16 has, especially with the Fox being such a good spell, introduced more variability for the pets. There's obviously a lot of variability with the troops. And now the equipment, like our competitive match the other day, I was getting ready to make my attack, and I had been using mostly my Golem Root Rider army. And so my Grand Warden had the Healing Tome attached. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. For my Hogs, I like the Life Gem, because the extra hit points from the Life Gem is better than the additional healing that I get from the Healing Tome, because they're more likely to make it to the Town Hall. In all of those ways, I love what they've done with equipment. But if I think about it from the perspective of somebody who is a Town Hall 12 right now, or a Town Hall 11 who's coming up through the ranks, they're going to be getting ore at a rate that is actually on par with the normal base progression. It's actually slightly faster than what you'd be maxing out with other portions of your base. And I feel like it's fairly well balanced. For those of us at Town Hall 16, you know, we want everything everywhere all at once. And so we want more of an opportunity. Clearly, Supercell has, you know, some money-making venture behind this, in that the Starry Ore and the Glowy Ore are available at a lower rate in terms of a daily basis for what you need to be able to max your equipment. But they basically make up for it when the events roll around. If you're spending the $5, or I think it's like $1,000 in Canada or whatever, but when you wind up picking up that event pass and you're able to get all the extra glowy and starry ore from that, it almost sort of levels out your progression for all of your equipment. And I think, you know, a year from now, people are going to feel differently than they do today, because they'll have had a chance to get a lot of that equipment leveled up. But they gave us so much all at once, which the Hog Rider puppet was, and the haste vial were, I think, supposed to come with Town Hall 16, but they just weren't like fine-tuned and ready yet. And so this is one where I just keep telling people, I feel like if it was a lot more aggressive, people are going to wind up maxing out their equipment at lower town halls as they're moving their way up through the ranks at a much quicker pace. And then they're going to be maxed out on ore the same way we're all just sitting on elixir, dark elixir, and gold. It feels like they built it pretty well in terms of the timing moving through. But it does also feel bad to those of us who are sitting here wanting all of the abilities, on top of the fact that, you know, now they just gave us two more for the RC.
Man, I should have took notes during that, because there's a lot I want to go back and argue with you on. But
we'll have to pick it up after you post it.
I know. So right now, my biggest problem with it is I don't see a light at the end of this tunnel. And through a decade of Clash, that's always been there. You've always been able to max something out and take a break. And at the rate they are adding equipment. Which I think we're done with commons for a while. Every hero has four common. I don't know when we're going to get more common. It's probably going to be a while. I think until the ratio of common to epic starts to make less sense, I wouldn't picture we're going to get more common. But we're still adding, you know, if the current rate of equipment keeps up, we're going to get a new piece of epic, you know, every other month. So six a year. It's just, we're going to spend a ton of ore on this epic that's going to get replaced sooner or later. It's just, it's never ending. And we've never, as players, we've never been compelled to be daily active for an indefinite amount of time forever, which we are now too. You have to get ore through the daily bonus and through constantly being in war. A lot of people are Town Hall 16s in Legends getting the most amount of ore. I'm farming up a 14, and my equipment is terrible, and it's going to be terrible for pretty much forever by my math. I know. And you mentioned people are going to start maxing out their equipment lower, and maybe I know you did a whole episode And you had a whole post about like the time it takes to max your Talon 8 equipment and the and Talon 9 and all the way up through the levels with the equipment that was out at the time. But the incentives aren't there to keep people at lower levels. Like the amount of ore you get raises with leagues. You are incentivized to rush and to move up faster and get in higher leagues and do better in war and get more ore. We're gonna drag behind and we're gonna spend forever catching up. Even if you consider you don't really have to get level 27 on all this gear too, which I'm not gonna do. I'm gonna leave my epics at 21, maybe 24, because you know you get diminishing returns beyond that. And they're just gonna get power creeped away eventually anyway, too. The next king equipment we get, whenever that is, it's gonna have to either be complementary to the gauntlet or replace the gauntlet, because otherwise it's gonna feel like a ripoff.
I think that's a fair assessment, because we always want everything, right? None of us would willingly go in and say, well, yeah, I mean, like, I'll take everything, but like there might be troops that we don't particularly like. I happen to love using golems. I've loved using golems since I was a Town Hall 8. And I have people that tell me, like, you're dumb, why do you use golems? Look at Root Riders, they have almost the same number of hit points. Not anymore. But even before, you know, them at 8,000 hit points, people say, like, oh, Root Riders are so much better. Why would you ever use golems? I'm like, well, I mean, golems do have more hit points, and then they blow up and they deal splash damage when they die, and then they make more golemites, which have more hit points. They're soaking stuff up, and golems find a massive use in my arsenal. Troops that don't necessarily find a massive use in my arsenal, goblins. Even for the most part, I don't even use sneaky goblins to funnel very much anymore. I mean, there are troops I don't use. So, to be fair, you know, saying, well, just suck it up and don't use some of the stuff is not necessarily the nicest argument. But I feel like, and I'll use myself as this example, the Barbarian Puppet is my number two piece of equipment that I'm choosing to use. And this is even when I have the dev box and I'm testing all the max equipment, I'm still opting for the Barbarian Puppet. So I feel like it would be once we're caught up, which we will eventually wind up catching up, we will catch up to the point that we can probably on an ongoing basis, just like right now, you know, if you were Town Hall 14 and then all this cool new Town Hall 16 stuff comes out, you're like, well, man, I'm never going to have that done. Yeah, because you do have to make it through the rest of Town Hall 14 and then all of 15 and then catch up to 16 in the same way that we kind of have that sort of initial push of we got to make it through these initial pieces of equipment. And I think that the rate that they're going right now, we're able to upgrade them fast enough that we could then really at some point in the future stomach needing to upgrade a piece of epic equipment every other month with really no problem. It's just that it feels so bad right now because we're all trying to level up some of the lower abilities. And I do think if they had wanted to make some concessions, depending on how quickly they plan on ramping up the addition of epic equipment, they could have potentially given us a few base levels on some of the other, you know, like the Vamp Stash and the Earthquake Boots and the Healer Puppet. They could have given us a few levels on those for some of the higher town halls. But I'm already sitting at, because I haven't put anything into the gauntlet, I've got like two pieces of maxed equipment for both my town hall, my main town hall 16s, and I've got another two or three that are sitting at like level 17 because I haven't put anything into the epic equipment, which I still argue the usefulness of some of the epic equipment. But I think most people will see, even without spending money on the game, for those that are active on a regular basis, because that is the hitch. And that's what's tough for me about my lower town halls. I can't passively just gather ore. I have to do stuff with them. So like my permanent Town Hall 9s will be fine because they're eventually going to get to level 9 on all four pieces of equipment, and then I'm not going to be doing anything else with them. So that part's probably okay for me in the long term, because once I start playing the bases more aggressively, then I'll collect more ore, I'll put them in war and whatnot. I think, you know, 6-7 months from now, most of our common equipment is going to be maxed out, and then we're probably going to be saying stuff like, I've got all this extra ore, I don't know what to do with it.
I don't see that happening. I will bet you now that Town Hall 17, which we know is going to drop this year, and because we're now in the yearly cycle, we're gonna get to Town Hall 16, and it's going to be a big source of outrage that people aren't maxed or anywhere near it maxed on the equipment that came with the Town Hall 16 update. I think that not being able to max and take a break, at least on equipment, is going to be the new norm. And that's something that I don't know, I'm going to have to work hard on accepting. And I'm not excited about it, but, you know, I'll get there.
Let me challenge one last thing on that. Right now, if they release a new level for their, you know, we're getting bowlers, we're getting hog rider, we're getting the minions, we're getting the baby dragons. Even if I didn't upgrade like my minions, I don't really use minions for the most part. I don't use baby dragons for the most part, except sometimes in my clan castle, which to your point earlier about the siege barracks, not a priority to upgrade because I can get one donated to me. I could literally never upgrade my minions and never upgrade my inferno dragons. I'd probably be okay with it because I have stuff that I favor more than something else. So let's pretend for a moment you get to a place where you haven't maxed your archer puppet and you haven't maxed your earthquake boots. Do you care? I mean, yeah, there's like the completionist part of us that want to be like, oh yeah, I've got everything maxed. I've tested, like, I would love to be like annoying to everybody and post all over Reddit about how great the earthquake boots are at Town Hall 16. This is my new favorite equipment. I can't find a way to make it work. I actually was thinking the overgrowth spell might be my in, because the downside of the earthquake boots is he's already destroyed stuff that's behind him. So when he does trigger that quake, you don't get the same value that you get from an earthquake spell, because the earthquake spell, you can put it in the middle of the base and it hits stuff in every direction. Well, the king, some of the buildings are destroyed behind him, so he's not hitting everything. The overgrowth spell could put him in the middle of a compartment so that by the time he uses his ability, maybe he is dealing 50% damage to everything else. So maybe there's a possibility. But generally speaking, if you never upgrade your earthquake boots, are you really going to feel bad about it?
We'll move on to another question, but I'll get the last word in because that's my privilege here. But I will say I don't think there are useless troops. There are troops that are half useless too. Like, you can look at Valks are very useful across a whole lot of levels. Their super version is useless. So I'll give you that. But overall, the Valk is a useful troop. Like, you say you don't use goblins. Sneaky goblins are useful, and I think any troop that you would say is useless would have a viable super component, or vice versa. And it's a little different because that can't be true forever for equipment. Just power creep is a fact of life in video games. It's going to happen. There's going to be useless, completely useless equipment that you have wasted. And say this because another question that I wanted to ask you, I really don't see them ever doing balance changes on equipment. Do you?
I don't know. I wouldn't rule it out. I think that it's entirely possible that they would do something where, you know, they decide, oh, well, this troop, you know, doesn't get used that much. Let's give it a buff. I think they might say, like, earthquake boots don't get used that often. Let's go ahead and stack some extra hit points into it. Or let's go ahead and increase the amount of damage that it deals. I could certainly see them choosing to do that. And the people who have already invested in those pieces of equipment would be saying, oh, I'm so happy. This is now really great. Or they might do something in the future where maybe, and I'm not saying this from a place of knowledge, I'm speculating, they might say, okay, well, now at level Town Hall 17, common equipment can go to level 21. Oh, and by the way, at level 21, earthquake boots also add, pick something super powerful. And then everybody's going to go, oh, I need to go back and upgrade my earthquake boots. So I actually do think that it would be very likely that they wind up tweaking or balancing. I don't think they'll nerf the equipment because I think that would cause outrage. I think there's a very good likelihood that they would wind up, to your point, like, I spent all this ore and then they take it away. They make it less powerful. But I do think that for something like the earthquake boots, for example, if they decided to buff that at higher town halls to try and get more people using it or more people interested, I could see that happening.
Buffing them by adding levels is something I hadn't really considered, and I should have too, because they've tried it with Lassie, not effectively, but
Lassie's so broken.
Like, either way, I don't think they have the incentive to worry about balance on equipment too, unless they release something and it's immediately broken in OP. They might dial it back immediately. But, you know, all the equipment we have now that we've had time to play with, I don't think they're ever going to touch it again. Because, you know, they're always going on about, you know, their limited resources and the things they have to do. And they're just going to work on the next piece of equipment that's going to replace it.
Wait, so that means they won't be adding new levels past 27 then?
No, I mean, maybe. Like, we don't know. We haven't been told that one way or the other. That might happen. And that might be a way to, you know, address underused or underutilized equipment in the future, but I don't, like, there's no indication that that's going to happen now. But anyway, we did see a question from the audience too. What do y'all, I love the use of y'all, what do y'all think pros will be leaning towards? Super Bowlers, Hogs, Lalo, etc., whatever. So I will say, as probably the one of the three of us that watches the most, I'm expecting the Root Rider show to just continue. Root Riders didn't get that big of a nerf. They're still strong, especially with buffs to other stuff, the new spell, everything else. I think it's still going to be Root Riders. Do you guys agree or disagree?
I was just going to say, I think it will be Root Riders for a while, but then it'll switch to something else. But that's based on just pure speculation. I don't have that much experience with pros. What about yourself, Trample?
I think for the casual players, I see no reason for people to stop using Root Riders. They might just wind up shaving a few basis points off the number of triples that they're getting, you know, their percentage of triples. But I think that the troop itself is something that is very easy for us to wrap our heads around how this thing works and how to use it to its greatest effect. So I don't anticipate a lot of changes on the more casual side, and even the world between casual and pro, in which I kind of feel like I live, I don't see a whole lot of change to what people are going to be doing, because I don't think it was like a critical nerf to the Root Riders. But on the pro scene, I think that there will probably be, you know, like just a few more people who are, you know, going with, you know, some of the extra stuff that you're going to get out of the Royal Champion with the new piece of equipment. I think you might see a few more of the pros moving back a little bit more toward Lalo, but I think your assessment of the Root Rider show continuing is probably 100% accurate.
I like how you say probably and 100%.
He is probably spot on.
All right. See, they've actually been kind of working through our quality of life wish list recently too. We got the friendly war thing handled. That was a long time ask for all of this. They did chat. This is the result of the chat survey that we all did last summer. Is there anything on your quality of life wish list that's still left?
I will say it is some kind of ability to chat and move freely between clans. So like, let's say in the Good Guys family, we've got, you know, a bunch of clans in there. It'd be nice as a clan leader, whether, you know, we take, you know, one of the leaders somewhere in the family and they are able to create what I sort of like white papered this. And I said, you know, I create a clan alliance. I'm the owner of that alliance. I can invite other clans that can accept to enter into that alliance, and it blends all of our chats together. I, as the owner of that alliance, can kick other clans out of it anytime I want to. And as another clan who accepted membership into my alliance, in the same way that you could become one of my co-leaders or my elders or just one of my members, your clan could leave that alliance at any time. You're not stuck holding with us. And I would love to see like a blended chat like that, with also some kind of ability that says within this alliance, anybody who is co-leader in one clan can move over into one of the other clans, whether or not it's closed or if it requires invite only. I would love to see people be able to move back and forth. And that's kind of a selfish thing because of how often I go back and forth between my own clans. And I would love to be able to do like a communal chat.
There's got to be something simple they could do just to make it easier to move between clans. Like, if you voluntarily leave as a co-leader, I think you should be allowed back in within, like, 24 hours or something, you know. More and more of us are hitting max capital town halls. You know, we still have to do the raids every weekend. No one cares about the leaderboards outside of five clans. And it feels like we're wasting capital gold. So, I mean, I move clans to dump it somewhere else. I've been dumping in the bad guys. Like, we're already up to, like, capital five. There, but mostly just for me, maybe a little Liam. Some way to move back and forth would be huge.
Yeah, without like having the clan anyone can join and having all those bots join or random people spying war.
Yeah, I know. Like, speaking of bad guys, dude, how nice is it just doing wars, just me and you?
I'm getting a tremendous kick out of it. I know we did a couple of wars with a guy named Jonathan, who's the leader of a Red and Zero clan, and being able to do that, it's like, it's just like, you know, we know what we're doing. There's like, you can probably see like weeks worth of chat in the clan chat just because we just kind of know what we're doing. That's been a tremendous amount of fun.
It's so nice just to pop on, do my individual hits, and trust that you understand what's going on and how to do your hits. And you can do the same too. On the rare occasion you beat me to it, you will leave me bases that I'm capable of. And we just don't have to talk. It's great. It's so perfect just to phone in perfect wars day after day. I love it.
I was just going to say, you know, it's pretty great you can do that as well when you're just doing wars by yourself. You don't have any other people messing with you.
Well, I mean, you know, we have a lot of experience as clashers, like knowing what we're capable of. And we can, you know, like I know, oh, well, I know that he's not going to hit this base, so I'll have to hit that. Or, you know, sometimes I'll go into the war and you've already made all of your attacks and you've wiped out a couple bases, which means I get free ore on higher bases with my lower town halls. And the same thing can happen for you. Sometimes I know you'll pop on there and everything's been destroyed and you can just snipe some town halls at the top. That's been an absolute blast. Plus, it's like, I know, aside from, I think there was one more where I missed like every single one of my attacks. But aside from that, it's really nice just having, you know, like where you don't feel like you need to say, oh, you hit this, I'll hit this, you hit this, I'll hit the other thing. Just everybody knowing what they need to do.
There really is nothing better than being in a clan where people know what they're doing. And you can just, like, you don't have to babysit. You don't have to check. You just do your own thing, and everything gets done and works out, and you win. I love it. All right, we will do one final one. When they first introduced the concept of merged defenses to us, they told us explicitly, like, this is a move to kind of rein back in base size and base complexity. You know, I was a big fan of that. I like that as a concept, just bring it back in, make it simple, make it more approachable for people. And then they immediately also introduced equipment, which is adding a whole lot of complexity to on the attacking side too, because now you have to consider there are 18 pieces of equipment, and they're all going to interact differently with each other. You add in the variables of the 9 different pets. And there's a lot to consider on the attacking side too, which it's probably more complex than ever before, which is kind of to be expected for new town halls. But I don't know, it seems like a really weird, contrasting way to approach the future Clash of Clans. And I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on that contrast.
I always thought that they were going to wind up making the bases bigger. And they've said, well, you know, we don't want to just keep expanding the size of the map, which I think makes perfect sense. That's something that I always just thought, oh, you just make it bigger, because they did it one time, right? They added a few tiles to the base or to the map. I like the direction they go, because I keep thinking about this thing where, like, oh, we painted the canvas completely and we covered it all up. Then we can start painting in a new color. And that's what I feel like the merge defenses are bringing to the game. The thing about the equipment that I like, that even though they are bringing in the complexity, most of that complexity takes place prior to the attack. I think about the army composition I want, my heroes, my pets, my siege. We're sort of used to thinking about all that stuff. So now the equipment is kind of like just another thing for us to think about as we go in. But I would really like to see, even though it's probably tough, I'd like to see us have the option to switch pets and equipment, like in Legend League, prior to the attack starting. At least for me, I think that would be good. Because there are times where I'm like, oh man, I wish I had Lassie on my Barbarian King for this base. Or there's 2 enemy heroes in this legend attack when I'm using my super hogs, 2 enemy heroes right where I'd normally come in, and the lizard would have been perfect for this. So I think that if they do, because they are trying to somewhat limit the scope and the complexity and immensity of the structure of the base itself, it doesn't feel too bad to me that they also make it, because the options that they're giving us on, really, if you think about it, it's all in favor of the attacker. The defensive layouts are slightly less complicated, and then they're potentially giving us more tools on the offensive side. So it all feels like it's a ploy or a strategy to benefit us on the offensive side.
Which makes a lot of sense too, considering all the feedback from Town Hall 15. But yeah, it does feel like we have more options than ever before to use as an attacker. But
it does feel like, on the one hand, they're trying to simplify the game, but then on the other hand, they're essentially increasing the complexity. And me personally, I like having more toys and more things to tinker with. And like, I think about at some point, you know, whether it's Town Hall 17 or 18 or 19, maybe if they continue giving levels to Lassie and the Yak and the Electro Owl, maybe we're going to be sitting at Town Hall 18 with a level 25 Lassie and a level 10 cool new pet doing whatever the cool new pet does. I just look forward to that evolution. And I do like, because they've talked a lot before about like 3 minutes for base identification is already tough. Because you're looking at, you know, settings on the Inferno Towers, locations of where you think traps might be, the positions of the heroes, the location of, especially, you know, depending on your army composition, the spell towers, whatever they're set to, ground expos versus air expos. There's a bunch of stuff to have to identify. So them trying to make it a little bit easier for us to quickly identify what we're going to do, which would be harder if they just continue to expand the size of the map, I think it's good for the attacker. But at the same time, all the cool new equipment and, variables there that, give us a lot more options. I think that's just super exciting and lots of fun.
Definitely. I think that does it for us for today. We already kept it half an hour longer than we had planned. Thank you so much for hanging out and doing that, doing the extra bit of ramble damage for us there. Before we go, do you have any parting shots or shout outs you want to give Trample?
So I'm really terrible about this because I would, you guys would have to play the Academy Award music to yank me off of the stage at some point. I will simply say, from a personal perspective, my wife and my kids have all been immensely supportive of all of my hobbies throughout the course of my life. And, as long as I've known my kids. And so I appreciate everything that they do because I get a chance to have fun with this hobby and, make content and talk to people and meet people. And they are very understanding. And so I appreciate that. In the Clash community, I've got my whole clan family with an amazing suite of leaders and co-leaders and elders and members and people that we kick out. And then they eventually come back and then we kick them out again and they eventually come back. So just the good guys family is great. And I think more than anything, just because this is a podcast and because podcasts are cool, and I'm not just saying that because I also happen to have a podcast, I enjoy listening to you guys chat. I enjoy having an opportunity to do my own podcast. I listen to Pineapples and Thorns with, right now, it's Kat and Peter. Fado recently took a break. I like listening to Clash Tours. C-Note, cool dude. Up until recently, Clashuals were putting stuff out. I know Big B just recently retired. I just really enjoy having an opportunity to listen to you guys as well. You guys put out a really great product. And I am honored that you guys were interested in having me back for a third time. And I appreciate so much all the support that I get, not just from you guys, but from also the whole community on Reddit. And I will say that, I tell people all the time, if you haven't heard this before, it's Congressman Cool Rick's fault that I eventually ended up getting a creator code because he was sending some messages late one night to somebody like, you should check this dude's stuff out. He's actually got a big following on TikTok, which eventually led to, me having more opportunities within the community. And that allows me to give back in ways that I would not have been doing if I didn't have a creator code. Like, I wouldn't be giving away gold passes and I wouldn't be posting as much stuff as I do if I didn't have that. So thank you to you guys. Thank you to the rest of the podcast community. Thank you to all of the clan members. And thank you to my family.
All right, Liam, what do you got?
Well, you might want to go first, actually, because I might do your shout out as well.
Okay. Well, I figured we were going with that. I agree with everything Trample said, but I do want to say here in this format, Big B, we are going to miss you. The Clashuals won't be the same without you, but hopefully it still continues and is still as fun and entertaining as ever with Clash Fan 9 here. Thanks for showing up and for the support here, buddy, too. Best of luck to you, CF9, in continuing the Clashuals. E, sent you a message. Hope you saw it. Think you did. But much love. I hope you have best of luck in whatever you choose to do next. And I hope it's just a goodbye from the podcast community, not a real overall goodbye. And I will leave it at that. Liam?
First of all, I just wanted to shout out Spencer for organizing these amazing events and putting in all the hard work he does. And then also, I mean, this is kind of too late, but I've been meaning for a long time, I've had this on my to-do list to shout out the Clash Royals and Big B especially for all the hard work he's put in, as well as Clash Fuzz 9, because they put out an awesome podcast there at the Clash Royals. So, yeah. And as well, here we have your very own Storm in the chat as well. So, Trample, you forgot to mention her, but... thank you so much for all the hard work you do, Storm, even though I don't know half of it. But yeah, everyone's helping to create a beautiful community here.
All right. Thanks again, you guys. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out during the longest episode of RTC we've ever done. I will edit this and put it out tomorrow, and we will see everyone back here live in probably 2 weeks. Keep an eye in the App Store for the update coming soon-ish, TM. And best of luck out there. We will see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.